Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's Dr. Tim Brown. We're doing Farmcast for the Community for February. But before we get there, like always, I want to give you a heads up on what's going to happen next month in March. I have Dr. Rebecca Stone coming on board. She's an expert in women's health, and we're going to talk about Plan B and other medications that are used for birth control over the course of that particular podcast. So tune in, listen up. It's a big topic these days, especially what's going on in the media with regard to Roe versus Wade. It's a discussion that a lot of patients have, and they want to know about the safety of some of these medications that are out there that do work for birth control, including those that are over the counter. So Dr. Stone will be joining us. She'll be educating us, and we'll be catching everybody up to speed. But before we get to that topic, I want to go back to February. As everybody knows, February is considered Heart Month. We talk about Valentine's Day, love, all those kind of great things, but in the medical world, we actually hone in on the heart, but it's also Black History Month. So I want to do something that hit the population of Black folks and how they deal with heart disease. And one of the biggest aspects we deal with in healthcare is something called heart failure. And here to talk to us about heart failure is Dr. Devin Lavender, who is an assistant professor here at UGA. He is a farm dog, graduated in 2017, Dr. Lavender?
2017.
And then you did your residency where after you graduated from pharmacy school?
Yeah, so graduated from UGA in 2017. My first year of residency, moved out to Memphis, Tennessee, and spent a year at the Memphis VA Medical Center. And then I actually did a second year of residency specializing in ambulatory care and chronic disease state management. I actually came back here to UGA to do that and was affiliated with the Charlie Norwood VA in Augusta. We have a outpatient clinic here in Athens that I was able to work at. So after that, I moved to Asheville and worked at the Asheville VA for a year. So lots of VA experience. And when this job opened back up at the university, I jumped at the opportunity to come back and work here.
Well, and we're glad you did. And I know that a large part of what you do, when you say chronic disease state management, you're taking care of people that have high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, but they also sometimes come with a diagnosis of the term heart failure. And I have to admit, when you hear the term heart failure, it kind of, you're like, what the heck? What is heart failure? This sounds pretty daggone horrible. Can you tell us a little bit about what heart failure is? And then I want to get into how it impacts different populations, including those people with a history of high blood pressure and diabetes. Can you give me a little bit of background, or give us a little bit of background?
Yeah, absolutely. The term heart failure sounds really scary when you first hear it. It doesn't mean that your heart is failing and you're going to fall over dead. Basically, what it means is that your heart isn't able to work as well as it used to. It can't pump blood around your body like it used to when it was completely healthy. So that's kind of what the term heart failure means. And because it can't pump blood as efficiently, people start to develop some symptoms of heart failure. And those are mainly some shortness of breath. So fatigue kind of accompanies that. So you feel tired. They get some swelling and around their ankles and their lower feet. And maybe if you lay down at night, you have to sleep in, you know, with a couple more pillows underneath your head, or maybe even you have to sleep in a recliner because it's really, really hard for you to catch your breath and sleep. So that's kind of what heart failure is. And then kind of some things that you may want to look out for to kind of get an idea of, do I have heart failure, or is it something that I need to talk about with my family members?
So quick question, like when you talk about shortness of breath, or it seems like I can't go up the stairs like I used to without having to stop and catch my breath, or sleeping in a recliner, does that happen from a Sunday to a Monday? Is it that quick, or is it years that we get to this point where maybe we're not even noticing that these symptoms are creeping up on us?
Yeah, I think that I would say that they're pretty progressive. So it can happen over an extended period of time. But there are certain things that can cause it to happen more quickly, especially if you already have significant heart failure. So, for example, patients that have heart failure, if they go a couple of days, eat at Cane's a couple meals out, eat out, you know, high salt intake, they can move from perfectly normal and not having any symptoms to really having significant issues and not being able to do what they normally would in just a couple of days. So I think that you can kind of see both things happen for heart
failure. So if I'm at home and I'm like, well, heck, do I have heart failure? You know, the symptoms you talked about, I think you know, how is it discovered? You talked about, like, for me, going up the stairs is something I do every day. I know my baseline. I know I get to the third flight. I'm like, oh, I need a moment. But if I had to stop at the first flight, should I be worried now about heart failure? Like, when should we seek out help to make sure that our heart is pumping the way it's supposed to?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think, you know, not everyone is going to develop heart failure. I think that knowing what other conditions you have is really important, and what risk factors you have for heart failure is also important. So I think if you take into account the fact that you're having to stop for breath after the first flight of stairs, and you're having to sleep in a recliner because you can't breathe, you also notice some swelling around your ankles. If you take all of those things together, then I think that you may want to reach out to a primary care physician or provider to kind of set up a meeting or an appointment to kind of discuss those symptoms.
That's a good point. So it's a combination of sort of your health history, what's been going on, and then if you have a lot of those symptoms that are happening over time, it's a good point. I think one of the things that throws me off, though, is when I'm talking to people about how this works or how the body pumps the blood, why am I getting shortness of breath? Why do I have that bigger ankle? Both ankles are swollen. I can't catch my breath. What does my heart have to do with my ankles and my lungs?
Yeah, it doesn't really seem to make a whole lot of sense. So what happens if the heart can't pump out what's needed, then the fluid starts to back up. And then the fluid can back up from the heart because the heart's connected to the lungs. And that's where the shortness of breath comes from. And then eventually it can back up even further down into the circulation system. The main reason we see swelling in the feet and the ankles is gravity, right? So most of us are up walking around. Our feet are usually below our heart. So that's where the fluid usually tends to settle. So that's why we usually say swelling around the feet and the ankles. But it's all because the heart is connected to every part of the body. And so just because your heart isn't working as well doesn't mean that's the only thing that's going to be affected. Since it pumps blood to every part of your body, it's going to affect your lungs, and it can cause that shortness of breath. And since it isn't working as well as it should, it can cause you to be tired and unable to do the things that you used to. And then, like I said, cause the swelling in the ankles because of gravity. That's where the fluid just kind of settles.
So what I'm hearing, though, is the heart is not, it's not squeezing as tight as it used to move all the fluid around. Does that just happen because we're getting older? I mean, what causes the heart to all of a sudden kind of lose its squeeze, if you will? What happens?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different things that can cause heart failure. The main one that we see is the heart can't squeeze hard enough to get enough blood out. And so usually that happens from some sort of heart attack. So when you have a heart attack, there's a decreased blood flow to your heart from the arteries that are there, and that causes some of the heart tissue to die. And because that heart tissue dies, then the muscle doesn't have the strength to pump blood out. There's also another type of heart failure that we see where the heart can't fill enough blood. It can't fill and get enough blood in there to pump it out. And so that one is usually caused more by high blood pressure that is uncontrolled or has been uncontrolled for a long period of time. And so those are kind of the two different types that we look at. So the first one is kind of caused by some sort of event like a heart attack that causes some of the heart tissue to die and it can't squeeze as well as it used to. But the other type is the heart can't fill as well as it used to. And that's usually caused by high blood pressure. And so the high blood pressure causes the heart to have to work harder. And when it works harder, it kind of gets bigger. And as you can imagine, our big bodybuilders, they can't really move their arms or their big muscles as well as somebody that doesn't have muscles quite so big. So if you apply that to the heart, a big heart muscle means that it can't really fill and squeeze as well as it used to.
So I think one thing to take away from that conversation too is the heart is a muscle, just like your bicep or anything else. So if it's having to work really hard, it gets bigger and it can't squeeze as much. To talk about the bodybuilders, that's a good analogy. I think the other thing I heard you say is obviously you can have an event, and we know that if we have a heart attack, we feel it, it's going to happen. But the other thing you talked about, I think scarier, I can walk around with blood pressure high not know it because I haven't checked it. I haven't gone and gotten looked at lately because I don't really want to see the doctor because they always tell me I'm doing something wrong when I go in. I could have sugars that are a little bit too high. Let's face reality. I could have what I call the COVID 20, where I, eat nothing but food all the time because I swear it seems like I can't do anything else these days because I can't go anywhere. Those things are kind of scary because I never thought about that really ending up making my heart not work as well. I get that I should control them. I just didn't think about them being connected.
You know, the problem is that you can't really tell if your blood pressure is high, right? And so that's why most people don't even realize it's an issue. And so that's why we've seen more of the type of heart failure that's caused by uncontrolled blood pressure over the last 10 or so years. Same thing with diabetes and blood sugar. I talk to patients about this all the time. I say, if it was just about high blood sugar, who really cares, right? You can't feel it. You don't really have many symptoms. Maybe you go to the bathroom a little bit more. Maybe you're a little more thirsty. But other than that, it's just high blood sugar. It's more about what diabetes does to the rest of your body. So, it affects, like we mentioned, your heart. It can increase your risk for heart attacks and strokes, your brain, if you don't control it. It affects your eyes. It can cause you to go blind. It can, affect your kidneys and cause you to have dialysis, affect your nerves. So I always try to make sure that when I'm talking to any of the patients that I see in the community or at the clinic where I practice, that I just explain that, just because you don't feel it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right.
And that's why it's really important to follow up with your primary care provider so they can screen you for things like high blood pressure, high blood sugar, diabetes. You mentioned weight as well. So obesity is a risk factor for development of heart failure, more from a lifestyle that's just unhealthy, eating foods that are high in, sure, in fat and things that are going to increase your cholesterol levels. And, making sure that you live an active lifestyle is kind of a way to prevent some of those things as well.
I think, talking about this obviously means you have to go get checked out and this is Black History Month, and I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the fact that it is really hard sometimes for folks in various communities to feel like they have good access to healthcare. It's just a fact. We know that. We're working on it in the world of pharmacy, but I feel like the Black population in general sometimes doesn't always get into the physician the way they want to. Maybe there's a trust issue there. I was reading that heart failure has a higher instance, or there are more numbers, there's more people that are Black that have heart failure than are white. Why is that?
I think that there are some genetic things that we know about for patients that are Black that are different from white patients. So one thing is there's a certain gene that white patients tend to have more of than Black patients. And so that's one thing that we know is a leading cause for Black patients to develop heart failure. It's specifically called dilated cardiomyopathy. So that's a really big word, but basically what it means is it causes your heart to swell, right? And like we talked about earlier, when your heart gets bigger, it can't pump as well. And that's something that we've noticed much more frequently in those that are Black or African American than we have in their white or Hispanic counterparts. In kind of preparation for this, I looked up some statistics just to try to see if I could give you guys some real life numbers about the, how big of a deal this is for our Black patients. And, patients that identify as Black or African American, they're 3 times more likely to die from heart failure than white or Hispanic patients. And they're 2.5 more times to be hospitalized because of heart failure. So it's a really big deal. And I think it's really important to try to get the word out in the community to let everyone know, especially our Black or African American patients, that it's really important to have a good relationship with your primary care provider. And I know that for patients that are uninsured or maybe they live in an area of, low socioeconomic status, we know that heart failure affects those patients more as well. So those people that don't make quite as much money, maybe live in a food desert because of where they live, that also affects their health. So, I think kind of keeping those things in mind that there's a genetic component to it that we know Certain Black or African American patients are just predisposed to developing heart failure more so than their whiter Hispanic counterparts. And then also taking into account access to care and making sure that we're able to provide the proper screening services for patients that live in these areas where they may not have as much access as they should.
Good point. I think one of the things, and as all the discussion been coming about lately about equality and making sure we treat, the one thing about healthcare that I really want to point out is we really try to make healthcare work for the individual. It's not about treating a population necessarily, but it's important to note that there are some risk factors that happen in certain populations that are higher than other populations. And as a healthcare provider, as you point out, getting the word out is important. It's true for everybody. Everybody should be screened and looked at for blood pressure and diabetes. But if you have a family history of high blood pressure or a family history of heart failure, and you happen to have a Black heritage somewhere, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, it's important, right, that you bring in that family history component into this too, because I don't think it's as easy anymore to say, oh, I'm white, I'm Black. I love the fact that there are people that are made up from all different kinds of folks. But family history here is important to help people with this in terms of their risk factor too, right? It's not just if you're Black, worry about it. If you're white, don't. That's too broad of a determination, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that family history plays a huge role. Like I mentioned, genetics plays an important role in a lot of the risk factors and development of the risk factors that can potentially increase the chances of you developing heart failure. And so, like you said, Tim, if you have, a family member that was Black or African American, it doesn't matter where, your dad, your mom, maybe their mom or dad, an aunt or an uncle, something that is in your family tree that could increase your risk for developing this, disease, it's even more important to make sure that you're being proactive to seek out, the screening to make sure that you're doing everything that you can to try to prevent you from developing this disease.
That's a really great point. You were reading statistics. I read some statistics as well. And one that really, it just threw me, maybe because I'm older than you, that's why it threw me. But it says one in 100 Black men or women could develop heart failure before they turn the age of 50. And I know how old I am, and sometimes I don't feel my age. I feel like I'm so much younger than that. But to realize that this could have happened before I even thought about, routine care. As I reached a certain point in my world, I see physicians way more than I used to. Let's face reality. But, before the age of 50, I can't tell you that I was always running to get a physical every year or checking my blood pressure all the time. This sounds like heart failure. The damage could start earlier. It's not necessarily a 60-year-old disease or a 55-year-old disease or an 80-year-old disease. It sounds like blood pressure in your 20s and 30s have a greater impact than I thought about when I was in my 20s and 30s by far.
I would say that you are absolutely right. And I think I think family history plays into you developing those types of risk factors earlier on. And usually the main people that are the main culprits that never go get checkups are the young guys, right? The young men are always the ones, oh, I'm fine. I feel fine. I don't need to go see my doctor. I'm good. I've never had any problems. I've had all these physicals for sports all my life and everything was good. And, I think that you're exactly right, that heart failure isn't necessarily a disease of the old. As these genetic factors come into play, it really can start affecting people earlier in their life, especially if they aren't controlling their risk factors, like their blood pressure, their cholesterol, and diabetes, if they were to develop that.
Yeah, it's funny you said it because, I grew up in a Southern family, and as guys, I have to tell you that they would go, why do I need to go there and pay a copay? I feel fine. I'll go when I'm sick. And what we're determining is that, especially those that are at higher risk for developing this, however you define that, whether it's, we talk about Black men a lot with heart failure because of the instance is even higher in Black guys than it is in Black women. You need to have a primary care person that you like and you trust, and you need to see them routinely. And here's the part that drove me crazy. You need to find them in your 20s. Because all of us are like, okay, I'll find that physician I like when I need them. You probably want them before you need them. And from folks I talk to, that's a hard thing to do sometimes, to find that person that you trust. And I think it's also particularly hard if you're coming from a population in which you have a history where maybe you didn't get the best care or you weren't treated well. And I can think of a lot of populations that that deals with, but that's important, right, Dr. Lavender, that you find that provider. I feel like that's the key to this, to the success of not getting heart failure.
I 100% agree. And I mean, I think, Tim, you hit the nail on the head that it can be really hard for some people to seek out that person, especially before they need it, to give them the routine preventative care that they need. And so, you know, most of the time they're seeing that person after they've had a heart attack, after they've developed heart failure, and it's too late to do anything about it. And, you know, that's one thing that I love about what I do in ambulatory care is I can develop the relationships with my patients and develop that trust. And they feel like they can come to me with what problems they're having, and I can really try to help them through that. And I think that's really, really important. And ask around. You know, I know that it's not cool to seek out, you know, who do you go see for your annual exam? Who do you see that takes care of your blood pressure, your cholesterol? But ask around. If your friends have somebody that they like, try them and see what happens.
It's funny. I was talking to a couple of friends the other night over the weekend, and I asked this question because, you know, I'm forever working. And they'd laugh and go, "We're having a beer, Tim. Can you just not work?" And I said, "But when you're sick, where do you go?" And they're like, "Oh, we go to urgent care or rapid response." And while I get that if you have a sore throat or you don't feel great, that's probably not where you go for your care, like your blood pressure check, your sugar check. You really need to have a relationship with someone in the healthcare profession that you see on a routine basis. Is that, and I'm harping on this, because these were a bunch of guys looking at me like I was crazy when I asked them if they had a primary care provider, physician, nurse practitioner, pharmacist, PA. They looked at me like I was crazy. And also a nerd, by the way, but crazy and a nerd, just so you know.
Yeah, so I think you're hitting at a couple of different issues there, right? The importance of having somebody that can follow you for over a period of months, years, you know, decades, developing that relationship, and they can come to understand your body probably even better than you can most of the time if you have that relationship. So that's the first point. The second point is we don't want people to use urgent cares for routine medical things like that. Mm-hmm. Because one, that overwhelms the medical system and the urgent cares. And two, it's a similar issue that we have with emergency rooms and emergency departments is we want to make sure that people are seeking out care in the appropriate places. And the appropriate place to have this preventative stuff is from a primary care physician.
Got it. So let's say I didn't pay attention to my 20s and 30s, which is true. And my blood pressure has been running high for a while. I discover it when I'm 52 years old. And they tell me that I have a touch of heart failure. How do I stop it from being from a touch of heart failure to being worse heart failure? And then secondly, what are things that I can control to make me live my 50s more healthy? Because I obviously didn't live my 30s and 40s as healthy as I should have if I have somebody tell me my blood pressure is too high and my heart doesn't look as good as it could.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one thing that I think is beautiful about the human body is that when something goes wrong, usually we have some sort of way to compensate for it. So that's one beautiful thing about heart failure is if your heart doesn't start, if it's not able to pump like it should or it used to, your body can kind of compensate. It can, you know, make your heart beat a little bit faster to kind of pump some of that blood out. It can, you know, increase your blood pressure to try to increase the amount of blood that's flowing through the body. And those things are great in the short term, but when they become a problem is the long term. And that's what happens when you have hypertension or blood pressure that's been uncontrolled for a long period of time. The main things that are really, really important, take your medications as are prescribed, follow up routinely with a primary care physician. All of those things are going to help make sure that from a medication standpoint, that's controlled.
So I should ask, since we're here, we're talking with you as a pharmacist working in an outpatient setting, What's the type of medication that you would be on if you had a diagnosis of a high blood pressure with a little bit of heart failure? And say I was a Black patient or a patient with a heritage that I had a grandfather who was Black and had high blood pressure.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So thankfully, heart failure is one of the conditions that we have really clear guidance on specific medications and using specific doses. And we even have recommendations to be used in specific patient populations as well. So, you know, for blood pressure, you're probably going to be on a medication like lisinopril or maybe losartan. Those are really, really common blood pressure medications. One of the new kids on the block is called Entresto, and it has probably been around for about 5 or 6 years. And that one is specific for heart failure. And this for, you know, controlling your heart rate, there are specific medications like metoprolol or carvedilol that you may have heard of before, or maybe your dad or your mom or your aunt takes them, or maybe you take them. And they try to slow your heart rate so that way your heart isn't beating as hard or working as hard. There's another medication called spironolactone that's used for patients that have heart failure. It has a couple of other uses as well, but it really works to try to reduce your blood pressure and try to help you get rid of some fluid. Let's see. So you've got Lasix or furosemide. Most people have probably heard of that one. That one is truly just trying to get rid of fluid to help you breathe a little bit better, help you move around a little bit better.
It's the water pill.
That's the water pill. Yep. That's what everybody says. They hate it, but it's a necessary evil because it makes them go to the bathroom a lot.
So the ones you've mentioned, we've got, you know, lisinopril, I think you said losartan, talked a little bit about drugs that slow your heart rate down, which is metoprolol or Lopressor, carvedilol. Talked a little bit about water pill, you know, the furosemide or Lasix with a spironolactone, which is a big word. Mm-hmm. How expensive are just the drugs we just talked about? Can I get them? I don't want to say the word cheaply, but, you know, it's great if a drug works, but if it costs $2,000 a month, I can't get it. How are those drugs in relation to being able to be affordable? And that's a relative term because, you know, everybody's budget's different.
Yes, absolutely. So I think the good part about most of those medications is they've been around for quite a while. They aren't branded anymore. They're generic. And honestly, the majority of them are going to be on your pharmacy's either free or $4 list that you can get even without insurance. So the lisinopril, I think, is free at Publix, $4 at most other pharmacies. Losartan would be similar as well. Now, Entresto, it's branded. It's a new kid on the block. Like I mentioned, that one is going to be more expensive. The metoprolol or Lopressor, the carvedilol, those are going to be on your $4 list too. So thankfully, the medications for the most part are going to be on the cheaper end when you're looking at the costs of them compared to some of the other ones.
That's good news. And, you know, I also know that if you are someone that has Black heritage, identifies Black, that there are a couple of drugs that you can use specifically for you that show good benefit, right? Hydralazine, yeah. And what's the other one? It's a nitrate, right?
Yeah. Yep. Correct. So they found this in a study that specifically in those that identified as Black or African American, the combination of the two medications called, one is hydralazine, and one of them is, it's a really long name, isosorbide dinitrate. So
yeah,
you take it a couple of times a day. And we found that those that identify, like I said, as Black or African American, that it reduced their risk of dying from heart failure and reduced their risk of hospitalizations as well. So that's a specific medication that we have that is targeted for that population.
So if you're walking in looking for medications, that might be something that's used particularly for you based on your heritage, or somebody could use the other drugs we've already talked about. Good. Do those drugs reverse heart failure? Does it make the heart get better again, or does it just stop the heart from getting worse, like worse heart failure?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think that the way that I look at it is when you're first diagnosed with heart failure, our main goal is to improve the amount of blood that your heart is pumping out.
So make the squeeze better.
Make it squeeze better. And these medications can improve what we call the ejection fraction. So the amount of blood that's pumped out of your heart. We can't improve that. We can't cure heart failure. It's never going away. You know, the heart tissue that's died from a heart attack is never going to regenerate. It's never going to be new again. But we can improve the blood that your heart pumps. So, and if you take the medications as they're prescribed, like you're supposed to, it will prevent progression or slow progression of the heart failure.
I'm not a big car guy. My dad would be upset with me because he is, but I think of this like horsepower, like what's your engine putting out to make your car go vroom, vroom. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like what the medications do is almost the same as tuning up the engine. So it continues to run smoothly, but it's not going to take away the age of the engine. You know, it just makes it work longer, if you will. That's a good point. Yeah. I like that.
Still got the miles on it, but you can add a little turbo here, tune it up a little bit and try to get it to a point to where it used to or close to where it used to perform.
I like the idea of the heart as the engine for the body. I like that. I may use that when I teach. I like that because it helps folks understand the anatomy. Mm-hmm. So we've covered a lot. We've talked about heart failure, how it doesn't mean that you drop dead right now, that, you know, it's progressive. We should be looking in 20s and 30s to really fix this. And that it does affect different populations differently. And depending on who you are, your heritage, how you identify, that's worth a conversation with your provider about what may work better for you. But if you had to leave our listeners with three pearls today on what we've talked about, what would you leave so they can say, okay, I think I've got this now. I know the questions to ask my primary care provider when I go in about heart failure.
Yeah. So I think the first one is prevention. Right. So we know that high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, smoking, they all increase your risk for developing heart failure. So early on, we want to make sure that you're having a healthy lifestyle. You're eating healthy foods, foods that are low in fat and cholesterol content, to maintain a healthy weight and maintain a healthy lifestyle. So prevention is number one. Number two is, if we can't prevent you developing those risk factors and you do develop them, because there is a genetic component that plays into those as well, make sure you're controlling them. Control your blood pressure. Take your medications like you're supposed to. Same thing with your diabetes. Take the metformin. Take the insulin like you're prescribed. And lastly, if you develop heart failure, make sure that you take your medications, because the whole point of the medications, they've been shown to reduce your risk of dying from heart failure and reduce your risk from going into the hospital for heart failure. So I think those are the main three: prevention, control your risk factors, and take your medications.
Spoken like a true pharmacist, Dr. Lavender. Makes perfect sense. Thanks for coming on board and talk to us about this. I know that you teach this. I know you care for patients that have heart failure, and you're an expert in this field. So I appreciate you taking time to come on and educate us about that. For those listening in, my name is Dr. Tim Brown. We've had Dr. Devin Lavender on today, who's an assistant professor here at UGA, works in the outpatient setting with a lot of folks in the VA population, and had some great insights on heart failure and how it impacts us all differently, but at the same time, pretty much the same, which I love that message as well. Next month, we're going to be talking to Dr. Rebecca Stone. She's going to talk about birth control, over-the-counter medications as well, and in general, women's health. Until then, I want to say thank you once again for listening into Farmcast for the Community. Go in good health, and we'll see you next month. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Thanks again, Dr. Lavender.
Thank you very much.